Stories from the Heart. I'm Sandra McDevitt. Today on Stories from the Heart, the true story of the life of a pickpocket. Did you know they have a culture all their own? The pickpocket in today's story has two women praying for him. But do things get better with your prayers or worse? Stay tuned to find out on another true story from the heart. As a kid, I dreamed of high adventure, of travel and intrigue, of danger and fortune. At 16, with my heart set upon being a jockey, I wangled a reluctant permission from my parents to work at a racing stable. From that time on, I roamed the country, taking care of myself alone, never understanding the meaning of, nor the reason for, honest productivity. I never got to be a full-fledged jockey because I found the easy way to get money first. In a hotel where I mingled with gamblers and other fast money fellows, I met a group of men who were pickpockets. One day in particular, Danny, I asked to teach me his trade, and he blew up. "What do you think I am? Go home, boy. Don't come near me again." And with a hard boot, he kicked me out. The next day, another pickpocket, who laughed when I told him about Danny, said, "I'll teach you, kid, if you'd like to join up with me. One of my stalls has left town, and I can use you." That was how I joined the light-fingered fraternity, as a stall, or the accomplice who distracts the mark of a prospective victim. And a fraternity it is. Pickpockets, light fingers, whizzes as they are known, have a world of their own and don't mix much with people outside their, quote, profession, unquote. They have their code of honor not to ply their trade in bars, looking for overloaded drinkers, and not to prey on the fairer sex. Those who do so are purse snatchers and not recognized by the professionals. They have a friendly reunions in cities after city, for they are gypsies, always on the move. Very few pickpockets operate alone. It's too difficult. But nothing is impossible for a really good pickpocket. No pocket is safe from him. No safety class will secure a stud or a stick pin from his reach. He can remove a man's suspenders without the wearer's feeling anything but loss of support. His eyes are alert and busy like a forest animal's, ferreting out his marks, always on guard for plainclothes men. Truly, the eyes are the mirror of the soul. No pickpocket can ever look straight at a member of the law. Off and on for almost 40 years, I made my living by pickpocketing. I spent 3 terms in prison. There were times when I tried to go straight. Once when I fell in love, I became a bellhop. But the breakup of that romance sent me scurrying back to the boys. Another time, fresh from prison, I tried selling radios. I just couldn't make a go of it. Looking back, it seems strange because I was accustomed to living by my wits, and people have always seemed to like me. Probably deep down, I didn't want to succeed. I've always tried to avoid responsibility, especially when there is work involved. And two, pickpocketing, with its lure of fast and easy money and its covert excitement, was my disease, as alcohol is to others. Sometimes I'd no idea of stealing at all, and then I'd notice a man fanning his pocket, patting it frequently, that is, to make sure the contents were safe. The challenge would be too great to decline. I'd wait for the mark to remove his hand, and in a split second, I'd have his wallet. Then, I'd step back and watch his reaction. I don't know whether I'd do this sort of thing because I was devilish, or whether I wanted to satisfy my ego, but I did it. But, about 15 years ago, my life began imperceptibly to take a different turn. One person who influenced me was a lovely widow lady, who is still my friend and a loyal one. She was always sending get-well cards and remembering people's birthdays and walking blocks to feed pigeons. She'd join in conversation with anyone, and often I'd tell her to be careful because sometimes they might not be the right people. Oh, all people are right people, she'd say. Only some make bad mistakes. On Sundays, I'd wait for her outside church. Occasionally, she would say it would be nicer if I went in with her. But she didn't press me. She said she'd pray for me. 8 years ago, I traveled 1,500 miles to be with my dying father. As he struggled hard for life, I tried desperately to find new doctors, new drugs, or something that could help him. There was nothing that could be done. And then suddenly, as I sat beside his bed, I leaned over to my father and whispered, "Try God. Ask God," I said. I don't know why I did it, but Dad looked at me for a long time, then folded his hands. And it seemed as though his pain eased. He died a few hours later. At his funeral, the church seemed foreign to me. Watching the altar boys serving as I had once served, and listening to the Mass, I felt confused. But in a day I was on my way again. My job awaited me, pickpocketing. A few years later, I got a call, much delayed because I couldn't be located. Now my mother was on the critical list, but I arrived too late even for the funeral. I went to the cemetery alone and just sat there, thinking. I had not made her proud of me. She had never found out about what I did, but still I had not made her proud. I began to see then, for the first time, that I was a thief, a sneak, and a felon. I was opposed to the brightness and goodness of life. The years were passing, and like so many leaves falling from the trees, my friends were passing with them. The old fraternity was getting smaller. Every time I heard of another boy's going, I felt a peculiar squeamishness in me, a guilt for both our past, his and mine. A couple of years later, another call from home. My sister, dangerously ill, had to have an operation. I knew, too, I was losing my sister. The surgeon met me outside her door, saying her recovery was in the hands of a higher power than his. Then he led me in. She was lying in bed, clasping a rosary, with holy medals pinned on her gown. Her face was bright. "It was inconsiderate of me," she said, "taking you away from your work. But I wanted to see you. I wanted to tell you that I'm going to be all right. And I wanted to ask you to help me." She gave me a prayer to St. Anthony and medals, and she asked me to pray for her. And I did. It was hard. I no longer knew how. But I prayed, and my sister grew well. I have not stopped praying since then. But I reserved myself the right to make a living, and that by the only way I knew. I made a compromise with God, I thought, by giving a percentage of my profits to the needy. I was too much of a con man to know you couldn't make deals with God. From that time on, mysterious, inexplicable things started happening. I seemed to be losing my touch. Frequently, just as I placed my fingers on a large roll of currency, it would slip from my grip. Or I'd get a wallet and it would contain little or no money. I'd bet on a horse, but I'd lose. I'd get back to my lodgings and find a letter from my sister beginning, "Jesus, Mary, and Joseph," and telling me that she was praying for me. I'd see the widow, and she'd tell me she had stopped at a church to pray for me. This continued, and I was making no money. I began to blame those two women and almost cursed their prayers. They were praying me out of business. Desperate, I walked into crowds full of detectives, something no smart pickpocket would ever do. Suddenly, I would think I heard a voice behind me, and when I turned to look, I'd spot some detectives before they spotted me, and I'd be able to walk away. It was as though a strange power were guiding me. Then one day, I lifted a wallet. When I opened it, I was stunned. There in my hand was the most beautiful picture of Christ I had ever seen. His arms were outstretched, and his face was full of mercy and compassion. I looked at it unbelievingly, and I started to mumble over and over, "Jesus, have mercy on me, a sinner." I went to my room, and for the first time, I felt it all, the worthlessness of my life, the pain I had caused others. There in the quiet, I prayed aloud, "O God, let thy will be done, not mine. Make me a better man. Give me strength to follow thy guidance. Let me be thy humble servant and serve thee well." When I got up, my first act was to mail that wallet with its contents back to its owner. There was 1 month before the end of the year. The Christmas season with its enormous temptations came and went. I did not steal. I have not stolen since. Today, I'm still looking for work, living off borrowed money. It is not easy for a man my age with a long prison record and no gainful work behind him. I cannot be in crowds without the police picking me up and taking me off to a lineup of suspected criminals. It will take a time for them to understand, if they ever do. I am praying for work. I am not looking for sympathy or charity. And I write this now because I feel I must, because I want to tell people the power of prayer, and because I want to be forgiven. I know that is possible because Jesus forgave Dismas, the thief on the cross, who stole heaven.
Prayer to Saint Dismas. Glorious Saint Dismas, you alone of all the great penitent saints were directly canonized by Christ himself. You were assured of a place in heaven with him this day because of the sincere confession of your sins to him in the tribunal of Calvary, and your true sorrow for them as you hung beside him in that open confessional. You, who by the direct sword thrust of your love and repentance did open the heart of Jesus in mercy and forgiveness, even before the centurion's spear tore it asunder. You, whose face was closer to that of Jesus in his last agony, to offer him a word of comfort, closer even than that of his beloved Mother Mary. You who knew so well how to pray, teach me the words to say to him, to gain pardon and the grace of perseverance. And you, who are so close to him now in heaven, as you were during his last moments on earth, pray to him for me, that I shall never again desert him, but that, at the close of my life, I may hear from him the words he addressed to you. This day thou shalt be with me in paradise.
Thank you for joining us on Stories from the Heart. Today's true story was from a guidepost and was written anonymously. For a copy of this or any of my stories, email Sandra at AveMariaRadio.net. Stories from the Heart is recorded in the studios of Ave Maria Radio. I'm Sandra McDevitt. May God bless the rest of your day.
Missed a show? Not sure if it came from Ave Maria Radio? Go to AveMariaRadio.net. A list of shows and hosts are there. And if you find the show you're looking for, you can hear the whole thing again by going through the Ave Maria Radio audio archives. For 2 years, we've recorded nearly every show from Ave Maria Radio. Just click on the audio archives message located at the center of our homepage. Now you even have more reasons to become a radioactive Catholic by going to AveMariaRadio.net.